So we go to paper nine.
Okay. So agenda paper nine. Last July, you also discussed how an issuer should classify a financial instrument that converts into a variable number of the issuer's own shares upon the occurrence of a contingent non-variability event that's beyond the control of both the issuer and the holder. At that meeting, you tentatively decided not to add this issue to your agenda and published a tentative agenda decision which stated that the instrument is a compound instrument comprised of a liability component reflecting the obligation to deliver a variable number of shares and an equity component reflecting the discretion to pay interest. You noted that the issuer must consider that the contingent event could occur immediately, so the liability would be measured at the full amount that the issuer could be required to pay immediately. The equity component would be measured as a residual, so it would be measured at zero in the fact pattern discussed. But because that equity bit does exist, any interest payments would be recognized in equity. The agenda paper summarizes the comments that we received. After considering those comments, we recommend that the committee finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda and have proposed wording in Appendix A. Specifically, we think IS 32 is clear that the issuer's obligation to deliver a variable number of its own shares meets the definition of a financial liability, and that liability must be measured at the full amount that the issuer cannot avoid repaying immediately. Given the broad range of feedback on the accounting for the discretionary interest, we are persuaded that this is a broad issue, or a broader issue anyway, than the scenario discussed in the submission, and we're skeptical that it can be comprehensively resolved efficiently within the confines of IFRS. So the question for you related to this paper is whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the decision not to add this issue to your agenda, and if so, do you have any comments on the proposed wording in Appendix A?
So to summarize for my benefit, if nobody else's, we're saying on the first issue, yes, it's a liability. Yes, it has to be measured at the full amount. But we're passing on the classification of the payments.
That's right.
The quasi-interest payments.
Correct.
Scott? Or let's let Charlotte in first. She hasn't had first call in a while.
I was just going to agree wholeheartedly that I think the liability bit's clear and I wouldn't touch the interest bit.
Just go around the room. Scott?
I also agree with the decision on the wording of the agenda decision. I would delete the second sentence in the last paragraph so that it would just read, the Interpretations Committee also discussed how to account for the issuer's discretion to pay interest. Committee noted that the accounting for discretionary interest payments is broad. Rather than try to specify exactly what about it bothered us, the measurement at zero, I started thinking about, well, what if the instrument is sold at a slight premium? Then the measurement of any equity component arguably wouldn't be zero. And could people read into it that we thought if the measurement was something other than zero, then it is an equity component? We didn't really decide that. So I'd rather just delete that sentence.
Do you have any problem with that, Liz?
No, I don't. That's fine. Okay.
Laurence?
Hi, I disagree with the conclusion for various reasons. I agree that where you have got to is one answer, but I believe that there are other answers you can get to with IS-32 and which could lead to different treatment. I believe that it is not so clear that you cannot claim that this is not an equity instrument with an embedded derivative, and which would require separation of the derivative with the derivative measured at fair value. So I believe that there is this other route that should be considered and further researched. This is because I think that it can be contemplated, and there are some basis for conclusions in IFRS 7 BC 28, where you can have, it says, that if that you may have several, it's a question of unit of account, okay, here, and how you look at it. Is it, do you look at the whole instruments or do you look at pieces? And here you have a derivative embodied in an instrument for which, in my view, needs separation. Because if you look at the horse, you have mandatory convertible bond. This is an equity instrument, but you have a feature in it, which is, but if contingent event occurs, then it will be reimbursed in cash. Why cannot it be analyzed as being an equity host with an embedded derivative in it, which has liability feature that should be analyzed and measured as such? And when IFRS 7, BC 28, leads you to the view that indeed you can have such types of instruments. So I don't understand why there is only one way to look at the thing. Do you look at the instrument as a whole? Should you look only at the instrument as a whole? Or why don't you separate that bit from the instrument? And I don't think that the standard is so clear that you can't have that approach. If you go that route, obviously, then you get two different measurements. I'm also concerned of the consequences of the analysis on other instruments. For instance, you may have plenty of convertible bonds where if that include a clause where if there is a change of control of the issuer, then it must be settled in cash immediately. Does that mean that those type of instruments shall always be accounted as financial liabilities in full for the full liability amount? I don't think this has been the practice. Another argument is that when we look at presentation of liabilities between current and non-current, and you have breaches clauses that would require immediate reimbursement of the liability if the clause is breached. That clause may be something beyond the control of the issuer or the holder. Still, in assessing how you present the liability between current and non-current, we've always waited until the breach occurs. Otherwise, this means that every time you have a breach clause that is not in the hands of either the holder of the issuer, the whole should be presented as current, which is not also the same situation. So, and I have other arguments I could point out. why do you make a difference, for instance, in the case where it's neither at the hand of the issuer or the holder, for situations where it's at the hand of the holder, it's not referring to contingent event. I have also references to IS 39, AG 27 to say that there are not much differences. So I have other arguments, but I'm not going to take too long just to disagree. But I do believe that there is a route where you can defend that it's an equity host with an embedded derivative. If it is so, the embedded derivative, the financial liability piece, is measured at fair value, taking into account probability of the event occurring, and not a measurement at 100% liability without consideration of that event occurring. That's ultimately what I believe, and otherwise the inconsistency of the reasoning where you have been to presentation of liabilities between current and non-current.
Andrew?
Some slightly mixed feedback, really. From what I've heard, where these particular instruments have been issued in particular parts of the world, bail-in instruments, then I understand there is something of a convergence of practice around accounting for these as straightforward debt, which I think is where the staff analysis would take us. So that's good. We seem to have some consistency for these particular instruments, and I'd be loath for the IFRIC to interrupt that consensus. That said, I share a lot of Laurence's concerns about the technical analysis in this paper and in this proposed agenda decision. I said back in July I felt IS 32 is unclear on this point. I know several of the comment letters, some of my professional colleagues, are also saying IS 32 is unclear on this point. Basically, I think you could read particular parts of IS 32 combined with IS 39 to say measure the liability at fair value, or you could read BC 12 in the basis for conclusions to IS 32 to say measure the liability, assume as you would a demand deposit, assuming that it's going to be settled in full immediately. It's not settleable in full immediately. It's not a demand deposit. The counterparty cannot demand redemption until the contingent feature occurs. It's economically really quite different. I've been sent a bunch of examples by my colleagues of instruments that have contingent redemption features where the amount payable on redemption is more than the issue price. That's a real thing. I think I mentioned it at the previous meeting, but that's a real phenomenon, and I can't see, if we go down this route, how we would avoid recognising a day one loss, or at least having a day one loss that we would assess for recognition as a consequence of the route we're going down with this instrument. The paper argues that, seems to argue slightly that firstly there is no equity component at all, but then there might be an equity component after all, sort of at the end. The paper says that there is no portion of the instrument that would meet the definition of equity. Well, there are discretionary interest payments. That's a feature with substance that the issuer can choose to withhold. And I think it might not be an ownership type interest, might not be a true residual, but that is an equity component. And I don't think we can say, therefore, there is no equity component. You just get to that conclusion by measuring liability at 100%. It's a mathematical rather than a technical analysis of the existence of a substantive equity feature. So I basically, to summarise, didn't think IS 32 is clear, and I still don't think it's clear on this point.
Okay, but rather than asking Liz to deal with these one at a time, let's store them up. John?
I don't agree with the staff recommendation because I don't think IS 32 is clear. I think it really needs to address whether this is actually a liability or whether it's a compound instrument. And I think if it is a liability, I tend to think the best reading of IAS 32 is that it's a liability, and BC 12 would tell me this is wholly a financial liability. So I wouldn't apply AG 37 at all, because I don't think the discretionary coupons on this are an equity component. I think they're the payments on a liability and they're interest expense. And paragraph 36 would apply. But I think that question has to be answered first as to whether this is a compound financial instrument or whether it's a liability. And if it's a compound financial instrument, then the question is, do the measurement requirements in paragraph 31 and 32 apply, or do the measurement requirements that flow from contingent settlement provisions in paragraph 23 apply to override the measurement requirements? Because paragraphs 31 and 32 have measurement requirements for compound financial instruments. So it seems to me the sequencing about how you actually approach IAS 32, approach this instrument and apply IAS 32 is critical. And determining whether it's a compound instrument or a liability, to me, you can do it differently. If you take this instrument and say it's a compound instrument and you go to paragraphs 28 to 32 to tell you how to account for it, you might end up in view two, which is that the liability is measured at fair value under IAS 39. If you say it's a liability, then I think the view that AG 37 applies, I don't agree with. If it's a liability, paragraph 36 tells me that the coupons are interest expense. So I think the standard needs to be clarified, or this needs to be taken on the agenda for interpretation. I don't think it can be just an agenda rejection.
Reinhardt?
My comments were going to be very...
Excuse me, Joanne, I skipped you. You're behind the water bottle there. So.
Reinhardt
first, and then we'll go back.
My comments were going to be very similar to John's, although I certainly understand the arguments for it being a financial liability. I think the various response letters have indicated that knowledgeable people reading the standard can come to different conclusions. And so if we say that, you know, we reject this because implicitly we're saying IS 32 is clear, I don't think that's the case. And so, like John, I would suggest that this really, this issue points out some of the inherent difficulties of applying the principles in IS 32 to an instrument like this, and point out perhaps the need to put it on our agenda for an interpretation, or maybe there's a need for, as I think one of the comment letters suggested, IS 32 to have some focused amendments to IS 32 by the ISB.
Joanna?
Well, having just heard four very long discussions disagreeing with this, mine was going to be, and still is going to be, a simple response, which was I actually thought that the paper adequately dealt with appropriately dealt with the letters, and I agreed with the conclusion that was reached in terms of the agenda decision. And I guess in hearing the previous comments, I guess I'm a little bit concerned that we are revisiting, or are we revisiting our original tentative decision that we put out there, or is this new are they the same views, or is this new information coming in that actually says, from the submissions, if you like, that the staff analysis of the submissions is wrong? Because we did form a view, the committee, originally, that this was the right thing. So, and I don't know the answer from those that have spoken, but I was convinced that the staff had adequately dealt with the letters. I have to say, as I think it was Scott in the very first place, in terms of the actual last additional paragraph, in terms of the equity bit, I would remove that sentence that Scott says, I think it was Scott, said remove. I also am a little bit concerned about the words both in the paper and in this last thing that says, agree, it's a broad issue, but it worries me to say that likely cannot be resolved efficiently within the confines of existing IFRS, because I would actually just cut that off to say it's a broad issue, full stop. Consequently, we decided not to take it on, because saying it can't be resolved within the confines of IFRS is actually quite a dangerous thing to say, I think. So I wouldn't have said that, but my conclusion is I support where the staff have got to.
Tony?
I guess I'm in the same place as others, that I disagree with where the staff's got to. I won't repeat what everybody else has said, other than to say I think these things are contractually and economically different from demand deposits, and that IS 32 is not clear for all the reasons that the others have listed. Maybe to respond to Joanna's thought, I think reading the comment letters demonstrates there are a range of issues that perhaps we didn't talk about first time around, where people have pointed out that the standard really is not clear. I think it could be read to get to this answer, but I think it could be read to get to a different answer. And I have one extra thought. I think it builds on something that Laurence said, which is I wonder about potentially unintended consequences, which is that at the moment, we would look at material adverse change clauses, changing control clauses, and so forth that would accelerate settlement. Laurence talked about that in terms of classification, but if you take a bond or any other instrument issued at a discount, that is clearly a liability. I don't think anybody today would measure that at the amount that would be payable if the material adverse change happened tomorrow. I think it's measured using amortized cost in the ordinary way, and nobody would think about measuring it in a way that reflects the change in control or the material adverse change kicking in tomorrow. So I think this potentially has some consequences broader than the instrument that we're looking at today. So where I was before, I continue to disagree with the conclusion.
Which brings to mind, if everybody is where they were before, how did we get here anyway? But I'll make that a no. Yours hasn't changed. I'll get you that. Oh, you have changed.
Yeah.
Okay. Then it ceases to be a rhetorical question, I guess. Okay. I don't hear sufficient support for the staff position. However, I don't see any clear signal of what we ought to do next. Two or three of you have said we ought to add this to our agenda. The last project manager assigned to the FICE project ran screaming from the room because every time he thought he had a general principle, somebody would throw a new kind of instrument at it, and everybody would say, oh gosh, no, it can't be that. So not wanting to send Liz screaming from the room, I think we need to have clearer direction from the committee on what you all think adding it to our agenda implies before we go ahead with it. But Marie, you wanted to come in on this?
To mention that it's instrument we see quite often, and so I can understand maybe we need an amendment or so on, but I think it's for us really important if something can be done on this type of instrument, because it's
that does beg the question again of what something is. Tony, you want to volunteer a thought?
I think we heard several suggestions around we could take it onto the agenda. It could get pushed to the board to think about limited amendments to IS-32, or as what we've talked about around the table demonstrates, the standard is not clear. There may be more than one way of looking at it. And we talked this morning about coming to a conclusion that there is something where there is more than one way of looking at a particular issue. And I guess that's the other alternative here, is that we conclude that at the moment 32 is not clear. And therefore there's more than one way that we could look at it.
Before I go to the others, does that raise the opposite unintended consequence of promoting diversity where there isn't any today?
Yeah.
Charlotte?
That was my question, really. When I raised it in industry groups, everybody was very clear where we stood. We issue these, we treat them as liabilities, and we value them like demand liabilities. I've never seen the opposite, so I'm happy to bring in expectation into measurement of liability, but it's not there at the moment, as far as I'm aware.
I guess I think it is with anything with a material adverse change clause in.
Yeah. Mm.
But that's not really the measurement issue, that's the classification issue.
That's the measurement issue.
No, that's the measurement issue.
A bond issued at a discount with a material adverse change clause.
That's right, the discount, you're right.
Yeah, so that's why I say I think there is diversity. I'm not sure we'd be creating any.
Okay, I think I was at Scott, or did you just jump in on that one?
No, I didn't yet.
You're done.
I'm not done.
You're not done, please.
I was going to say, I thought if we add it to the agenda, you know, the scope is, at least to begin with, equity instruments with contingent cash settlement provisions based on events that are outside the control of the issuer and holder.
Laurence, does that capture your shopping list?
I think we won't get to anywhere, because I believe it's a more fundamental issue about, as I said, the unit of account and how do you assess instruments. Do you start looking at each element of it? Do you separate them or don't you separate them? And this is why I found better my reference to IFRS 7. BC 28, which takes the example of saying this is more complicated for compound financial instruments with multiple embedded derivatives whose value are interdependent. For example, a convertible debt instrument that gives the issuer a right to call the instrument back from the holder, or the holder a right to put the instrument back to the issuer. So this basis for conclusion implies that you can have a compound instrument with a put held by a holder that they can put back, and it requires measurement of the embedded derivative elements into it. so that you disaggregate the thing. So to support the view that you can have embedded derivative in an instrument, which is a route that has not been taken by the staff or analyzed by the staff so far. And so coming back to my point, I think that it's a fundamental issue about a unit of account of such instruments. When do you disaggregate? And this is currently being debated at the framework level. So I doubt we can get to anywhere.
Andrew?
Well, there's potentially a reasonably narrow issue on measurement as opposed to classification of contingent settlement provisions. But that would only be, I tend overall though to share Laurence's concern that actually it's not going to be satisfactory to just tackle that one issue when we are really confronted with a broader question about the order in which different components of IAS 32 should be applied and how those components interrelate to one another and indeed to some of the embedded derivative guidance in IAS 39. So overall tend to fall more into the attorney's camp. This is probably just too broad for the IFRIC to take on. So conceptual framework level, we're talking longer term, there is some discussion about the way forward with a general debt equity classification model, so there'll be some change in due course coming down that route, and I'd be somewhat loath to start tinkering with IAS 32 in the meantime. I suspect it might founder. On the diversity point, from what I've been informed, there's limited diversity in practice for this particular instrument. Of course, it's early days, and I think we're expecting many more to be issued, but I think there is some diversity on how people look at contingent settlement provisions more generally. And I don't think anyone in practice is recognising a day one loss where the amount payable is more than the issue proceeds.
John and then Martin.
I mean, it concerns me not to do anything because I think there is some diversity in practice, and I think we've seen diversity in practice on the treatment of these on jurisdictional basis. So in certain places they're treated as all financial liabilities with interest expense, in other places they're treated as compounds with a significant equity component. Concerns me because a lot of these have been issued by financial institutions, so if some are going to treat this as having a minimal equity component with payments of distributions being dividends, and others are going to treat them all as liabilities with payments of the distributions as interest expense, seems to me we have a major comparability problem between global financial institutions. So I think doing nothing is really not a very good option. I mean, I think that the only way this could be tackled is to look at how IAS 32 should be read. Because it seems to me it's all about the sequencing of IAS 32. Do you come at IAS 32 in a sort of paragraph order, and you know what takes precedence? Do you look for the compound equity features, and you extract those out, and you say I'm in compound instruments, or do you say the contingent settlement provision trumps everything else, and I'm dealing with a financial liability? And I think that those, and it is a really broad issue, so I don't know that we're going to be able to answer it in the context of just this one instrument. But it seems to me it requires a fundamental look at IAS 32 and how IAS 32 should be read.
I'm struggling with fundamental, yet we can do it.
No, I didn't say we could do it. I just said I think something needs to be done to look at how IAS 32 ought to be read. Now, I don't know that the Interpretations Committee can do that.
Martin, and then Don.
Said I would not recommend to put it on the agenda because I believe we as Interpretation Committee could not really contribute to a solution. We would have to set artificial borderlines. I mean, we are clear about classification, we are not clear about measurement. With regard to measurement, then I would put in some sentences saying, okay, at least we would expect sufficient disclosure that anyone who reads the financial statements is able to follow what the company has done.
Don and then Marie.
Yeah, thank you. I don't want to sort of express a view about which way would be the best way, if I could work it out, of taking it forward, but just to sort of highlight or to echo the concern about the importance of the issue. Because my understanding is that under Basel II, it may have been that there was a bit more sort of flexibility for banks. I'm not quite sure what the right word is, but under CRD IV and Basel III, I think that it's quite strict now that the banks, in terms of their tier one capital, follow the accounting, and so that the IFRS is actually more significant perhaps than it was before. And so I think there's perhaps going to be quite a lot of attention paid to this particular area.
Marie, and then we'll go back to the phones to wrap it up.
Is, I think for the moment, in most cases, we've seen this specific instrument in depth, as said Charles, and saying it's really widespread and so on, we might create a lot of diversity where there's not so much on this specific instrument for the moment. And these instruments are more and more, more common because of prudential rules. We have no solution. So.
Let me ask, well, let me go to the phones first and then ask the question. Any, Sandy? Okay, we've lost Sandy for the moment. Luca, did you have anything more on this one?
No more. I share the concern regarding the fact that with this particular instrument, EIF-32 is not clear. My concern is that it's something that we can manage inside IFRIC, or on the contrary, something that we have to put to the attention of the board to have a limited project to amend the standards and make clear, especially relating to the measurements.
Shelley, did you have anything you wanted to interject?
Not at this point, thanks, Wayne.
Okay, Sandy, getting back, are you there at all? Okay, we've lost Sandy, evidently. I hesitate to try, but let me take a stab here. Question one, let me rephrase. It is not disputed that there is a liability piece to this instrument. It is further not disputed that that may be by far the biggest piece to the instrument, the specific instrument in front of us. The question is that the only piece that gets measured? Because the staff paper was that you measure this thing at par, as if it were a demand deposit. Alternative view one, I'm trying to put this in terms of something the staff can deal with. Alternative one is you measure it initially at fair value and apply amortized cost to it, which would include fair valuing the contingent settlement piece. You'd have to. The residual then would be equity. So you would not measure the equity piece directly. That would be one approach. Matter of fact, that's the only approach I can think of alternatively to the one that the staff has put in front of us. Question for the committee, or more for the staff. Knowing how these things unfold, can we keep it to that focus without traipsing into some other minefield?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay, that would argue then for the plan that several people have put, which I think we're all loath to do if we can avoid it, which is to say diversity survives, we just can't deal with it. That seems to be the only other alternative. Unless you've got a magic solution, Liz.
I do not have a magic solution. I mean, I think maybe just from the staff's perspective, I acknowledge a lot of the issues that folks have brought up about instruments that are similar to the one that was submitted. I think our objective in the recommendation in this paper was to see if there was a discrete issue that we could provide an answer on. So we took the exacting instrument that was submitted to the committee, which admittedly was simplified. It was issued at par, and it converts at par. And we tried to answer that question as a discrete issue. So it's not that we're unaware of all of the other sort of knock-on issues. We were just trying to at least address a subset of the diversity for the instrument that we thought was clear.
And I think that's the reason why I'd agree with Liz's answer to your question, Wayne, because I think the concern with any of these instruments is if we start to opine on what we think the correct treatment is in more detail for this instrument, thinking of the knock-on consequences everywhere else is very dangerous.
Conference.
Which is why 32 questions sort of patchwork is always a scary concept.
Well, I'm actually thankful that you all answered it. I was terrified that you were going to answer it the opposite way. So, okay. So the agenda decision is... But it's not that there was no consensus on the answer. It was that it's that we, as a group, have decided that this is a bigger answer or a bigger set of issues than can reasonably be addressed at the committee level. Not remarkably different than our decision on pensions earlier. Any disagreements with that, objections? Okay. Well, Charlotte's not happy with it, but...
I'm not particularly happy with it either.
Yeah, happy is probably the wrong. Yeah. Laurent's last word.
There is a sub-issue that has been highlighted by the comment letters, which is how do you account for the interest? And whether the fact that if you consider that the whole amount of proceeds is whipped off by the liability element, this makes it that you no longer have an equity component, and so therefore interest payments must go to P&L. And this one, I was wondering whether this, and so we had, through the letters, clear cases of diversity. And it turns back to what John said. Is this something we think we could address or not for the interest? Does the fact that on the instrument, if the equity, if we figure out that there is a compound, but the equity element gets measured to nil, does that lead to the view that if you have this discretionary interest payment, because the equity piece is nil, those discretionary payments shall be recognized in P&L?
I think for me the tricky bit of that particular issue is I think some people would agree that sort of theoretically an instrument like this is a compound instrument, but then they would change their mind once you measure the liability and it requires the entire proceeds. So I think if the entire proceeds is allocated to what you've identified as a liability, even those people who would have initially thought it was a compound would then change their mind. So I think it's very difficult to talk about what you do with the dividends in a compound when so many people disagree that a compound exists if you don't allocate any proceeds to it.
So that's my new
question. Okay. I think we've beaten that one sufficiently. Okay. Paper 15, Liz?
Yep. Yeah. So this is our simple instrument.